You all set?
It was very profitable.
Good. I'm glad. All right. So, in some ways, I think probably unfortunately for me and Matt, the service piece is the easy piece, right? Figuring out where to go and balancing some of those trade-offs in some ways is easier than figuring out how we're going to manage and govern it, and then of course how we're going to pay for it. And so, one of the things that we want to do in the second half of the meeting is really talking about political and community support for how we're going to govern it and then how we're going to fund it. And so I'm going to talk about governance first, and then we'll transition into the funding model. So first of all, we've been holding a series of stakeholder interviews with some of you. I think many of you have participated in those, and thank you for your comments and your opinions. Some of the things that we've been hearing is that people say, yeah, like in theory, this is a great idea, but they want specifics. How much is it going to cost? What exactly are we going to get for that investment? And then how are we going to share those money and those costs across the different stakeholders? We did hear that we're getting close to the best time to request funds, which is at the end of the year when many of the potential partners are doing budgeting. They also said that they want really clear, well-presented, well-articulated materials that show in detail, like, when is the bus going to come, when is it going to finish, what's going to happen if we agree to 1.8 million and it comes in at 2.4, or how much is it going to go up next year. Like, those questions are really important to people, and we need to make sure that before we finish the study we answer all of those questions. We also have to talk about this idea that people will see, they might see empty buses from time to time, and for sure we know, like, if we're driving in from Dewey Humboldt into Prescott and then we go from Prescott back out to Dewey Humboldt, that trip from Prescott to Dewey Humboldt probably isn't going to carry as many riders, right? Not in the morning. In the afternoon it will be flipped. And that's part of providing transit service. It's great when you're in New York City or in Phoenix and you have people that want to go from one end of the line to the other end and it's filled on both ways, but for small and growing markets like this one, that's not always the case. So we need to acknowledge that, talk about it, and make sure that sometimes people might see a bus that's not full. And then this idea that we do need to be attractive to young people. We need to support business and economic development, so that means getting people to jobs and to workplaces. And then of course there's a lot of support for older adults and veterans in this community. So those are some of the things that when we thought about governance and money that we kept in mind. And some of these things are our assignments moving forward. So we looked through the Arizona state statute and we looked at some other projects that have been done around the state about how we can govern a public transportation service in Yavapai County. So, and it turns out it's not as easy maybe as we had thought. We talked about a laugh from the people that have been doing it for a long time. One of the things that we talked about was this Intergovernmental Public Transit Authority, IPTA, which is what, I always mispronounce it, NAPTA?
NAPTA
is. And could we, and we had consensus from a lot of stakeholders that this probably was the right way to go. But when we looked at the statute in closer detail, you have to have 200,000 people or fewer to qualify for that organizational structure. So Yavapai is over 200,000, I think 220, 230, and maybe even higher at this next census. So that means that option is off the table. There's potential that we could do a legislative adjustment, but that will take longer. So we went through all of the options that are available to us, and there turned out to be three that were on the table that fit with what we're trying to do. One is a Metropolitan Public Transit Agency, the MPTA. One is a Regional Transportation Agency, RTA. And then the third is a Joint Powers Organization. So we did do a little bit of analysis on those three options. The Metropolitan Transit Authority, it looked really good to me. It's for counties that are more than 200,000 but less than 400. It is sort of like an IPTA, but when we dug into it a little bit and I had some conversations with Chris, who talked to some people on his boards, one of the glitches with this is that the people who serve on the board are elected as in a general election. So that means if you're with the city of Prescott and you're contributing money to this, you don't necessarily have a voice on the board on how that money is being spent. And so based on some of the feedback that we got, that's probably not an acceptable option, at least not in the beginning. And so we are going to take that one off the table. If anybody has any question about an MPTA, you can ask now. All right, so that left us with two, a regional transportation authority and then also a joint powers organization. And I think many of you are familiar with regional transportation agencies. They are used widely around Arizona. And the idea is that the county would, based on the size of Yavapai County, Yavapai County Board of Supervisors would have to establish the Regional Transportation Authority, and then that Regional Transportation Authority could start to begin. It typically is a transportation authority, so that means roads, it means bikes, it means pedestrians, and it means transit. And most counties use it. They go to the voters, they ask for a tax to fund the regional transportation program, and they also have a long-range transportation plan that goes with that funding. So we say, this is what we're going to do. We're asking for a half cent or a cent or a sales tax or a property tax increase. If you vote for that tax increase, this is what you'll get. It doesn't have to be that way. We could do a regional transportation authority and not do, I mean, this is something we're going to have to dig in a little bit more, but my understanding is we don't have to do a tax. You could still use general fund contributions to a regional transportation authority, and you could establish it with a more limited function. But it's a little bit awkward for what we're trying to accomplish here. The third option is a joint powers organization, and that's where the partners that want to participate in the public transportation, they come together, they contract with each other to provide, and they design the organization the way that it suits them. And that through these agreements, that they would agree to provide funding, to sit on a board, to oversee that governing, and to operate public transportation services. It's a little more work because it's not set, you have to do all the work setting it up for yourself, but it is a little bit more, gives you more flexibility. So any questions? And I have a couple more slides that just talk a little bit about this. The JPO is tailor-made solution, so you got to do the work to figure out what you want to tailor it to yourself, but that is an advantage. This is how Valley Metro Rail started with a joint powers organization. And I believe they're still operating as such. But they do not have taxing authority. So funding would have to come through contributions, partnerships, and fare revenues and things like that. So any questions about a JPO? Yes?
I have a question about the other one, the RTA.
Oh, okay. So the highlights of the Regional Transportation Authority, it can be in a county with a population of less than 400,000, it requires that the County Board of Supervisors establishes it. It can be funded with a tax, but it doesn't have to be. The geography is regional, so there's some opportunities for Yavapai County, but for the Quad Cities, maybe that makes it a little bit more complicated. And the implication is that it will be multimodal. I think we could potentially not do that.
That's my question. Because right now we have SIMPO, who is the designated planning entity for transportation in a sub-region of the county. How does, if we were to establish an RTA, how does that complement SIMPO's current role or conflict with SIMPO's current role or usurp, if that's what it does, SIMPO's current role?
Do you want to?
I could try. Right, so just to repeat what Lindsay's saying, and this is something we've definitely talked about. We've actually talked about it for a couple of years off and on, but how is SIMPO's current role affected or not affected or whatever that means. So if you look at the RTAs that are in the state currently, which is Maricopa County and Pima County, they both have MPOs and they actually work jointly together. So when you walk into the Pima Association of Governments building, there's an RTA door right there, right? Then there's a PAG door. And they really function together basically as one. So if the RTA was an option, and now the SIMPO board needs to have that discussion of what does that mean for us? Are we part of that RTA? Are we now going to be countywide? Do we just stay and focus on what the MPO boundary is today, and the RTA does their own thing, and we just jointly work together? I think there's a lot of questions on that that I can't give you a for sure this is what it would be, but the ones that do exist, they do basically function as one. So I hope that answers your question, Lindsay. Sort of.
So Chris, what about the JPO? Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on that?
So for the JPO, and what we've been talking about is that seems like it might be something that could get us going right away.
Yeah.
It avoids having to go through the countywide aspect.
Right.
It avoids the SIMPO issue. We could set up, you know, the member agencies and maybe a service area, which could then just be the MPO boundary, because that's really what we're talking about anyways. It doesn't have the taxing authority option, which the RTA does, but then it does have the ability to use the county excise tax, but that's then up to the county board of supervisors to ask for that if we were to ever go down that path. So that would have to be an agreement amongst all the municipalities and the county to even go down that path. Because the reality is, you're going to start with a dollar amount, you got inflation, even if you don't add anything, your costs are going to go up. But if the service becomes popular, you're going to need to add more service. And then how do you pay for that? So at some point in time, a general fund contribution is not going to cover it. So JPO is a good start, and maybe it transitions to something later. I think we heard loudly from most of the folks, stakeholders, and even in our general groups, that the IPTA was widely favored. The other option is form as a JPO and try to get the IPTA legislation changed. That one also does not have any taxing authority with it, but it's also as clear cut as you can get. So, Jody?
So, Chris, if I understand right, with the JPO, it can go beyond government to other entities or businesses, nonprofits, to help be part of that bundling of funding.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank Todd.
Todd, you were next.
Sure, I was just going to kind of say, part of this conversation with NACOG, we're very curious of what the conclusion is going to be today, because we are just about to kick off a study of our own for Yavapai County as a whole, kind of looking to build off a lot of these conversations on, you know, is the JPO approach the most appropriate here? What does that look like for the Verde Valley and other parts of the community as well? And so maybe I just want to kind of say that there's we're already kind of prepping for some additional analysis on what this could look like with a transit focus. But hopefully we can kind of build off what you guys find here.
Okay. So if you didn't all hear, NACOG's actually doing a study. It's called Yavapai Passenger Transportation. It's much more longer distance, connecting the Verde and Prescott and other parts of the county, and tacking them into how does that relate to Flagstaff and Phoenix. So that's something that's going to take the information that we develop in this study and help expand on that to a countywide structure. Did I get that right? Good. Yes, Lindsay.
The JPO, when you organize it, does one of the partners have to be the lead partner, or can the JPO form its own administrative structure where all of the partners share decision making instead of one partner being the lead?
Right, so that was a question. If you do a JPO, is there one lead agency or is it a shared entity? So I'm gonna talk a little bit about the funding model, and the funding model involves sharing. You know, not everybody's gonna be taxed, or not, no one's gonna be taxed, but the cost per each community and each partner is gonna be different. And so the JPO would have to determine how it wants to organize itself and how it wants to balance that, those questions. So I do think in practice that they would need a lead agency, somebody to go out first and say that we wanna do this and put some resources behind that and bring the other partners in. And then once the JPO is established, they can determine how they wanna govern themselves in a way that is equitable and appropriate. Yes.
How far in the future
do you foresee this?
So it depends on this group. It will take time to form a JPO, but it is something probably that could be done, I don't know, maybe a year, 6 months.
Maybe
2 years. But it is something, it depends, you know, like if we say we want to do it and we roll up our sleeves, we can do it quicker. But it does take time to build relationships and bring partners in and agree on the terms. I mean, that's not a small accomplishment to do that.
But it's in the foreseeable future.
If we desire to commit to it, yes. Yeah, Norm.
Catch up here if you would, but I'm looking at the original scope. We had technical memos that we were going to get throughout, but we've, rather than having recommendations, that's why when Matt started, you've got the recommendations today. So are we going to get a draft final report here soon? I mean, in close proximity?
For sure. I think one of the things that we've been putting a lot of the emphasis on this project is on the conversations with you all, because one of the things that we saw with the previous studies, they were really good, and they produced a lot of technical documents, but those technical documents spend a lot of time sitting on shelves and keep hiring consultants to come back. So and Nelson Eigert in general, we like to use a briefing book approach, which is less technical, but we'll get you what you need, but also design a report that people is easier to understand and a little bit less technical. But some of these specifics about service operations and financial assumptions and things like that will be documented.
Okay, so I didn't get any of this material for today's meeting. Did this come out? Did I miss it?
No, we haven't written it up yet. We're sharing it with you first.
So, okay, then when's the draft final report? That's what we're getting next, right? With a roll-up of all this stuff we're seeing?
It will come, yeah, definitely before Thanksgiving. We have a slide on it at the end.
Okay, so has our schedule slipped a little bit?
Not much.
A little bit, maybe.
Well, the original calendar had it in September. I'm just trying to keep up. So we're about 60 days or three around Thanksgiving.
Well, we might be October, maybe.
Yeah, we can try to advance it a little bit.
I don't know if we particularly need to push it. I'm not saying as a technical staff member, as a cap, I'm just saying let's do the study right.
Yep, for sure.
Other people are waiting, right?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get caught up with you on what I can present to the town of Crescent Valley.
Okay. Yep, a lot of them, yeah, we can definitely get you some materials. Okay. Any other questions about the governance piece? So I think based on the conversations, we're going to move ahead with a recommendation for a joint powers organization. Does that feel appropriate to folks, Sandy?
No, yes. I mean, I'm voting yes.
Okay, you're voting yes that is the right path. Okay, okay.
Are you going to have like a bus going this way and a bus going this way, so you can get off of one bus and transfer to the other?
That's the idea, yes. We call that time transfers, yeah. And that
I don't know what it's called.
But that would be the goal, to time the transfers. All right, so now I want to talk, go ahead, Lindsay.
One last question on the JPO.
Yep.
What types of entities are eligible to be partners? Nonprofits, human service organizations, or only governments, or SEMPO?
Okay, I think, so Lindsay just asked the question, what type of organizations are eligible to be a part of a joint powers organization? And government for sure, and I think universities and hospitals. There are some restrictions I can't remember off the top of my head, but we have that information and I can share that with you.
The number one thing they'd have to bring with them is a checkbook, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and then...
So as people join in on this, and are they going to be like, what if they decide they don't want to be a part of it anymore?
So
then that means the cost may divide among what's left, which would get just a question, and maybe you said it and I missed it. So
no, so the question in the back was, what happens if somebody joins the JPO and then wants to pull out? And then what would happen to the transit service? And so, if I were putting together the JPO, I would want to have a clause in there that gives, you know, there's this time frame for pulling out. That once you commit to it, you commit to 12 months or 18 months or 24 months, so that there would be time and an opportunity to adjust for those kinds of decisions if somebody is in and doesn't like it. Yeah.
So you'd have stipulations in there also for them pulling back their assets.
Exactly, exactly.
And yep. Then if they pulled out, they could lose their service. Home.
Correct, yeah, right.
Can you maybe go over, I think Flagstaff is an IPTA, but can you kind of go over the experience they've had, if it's similar to this, about voluntary contributions? I think that was discussed before.
So they've kind of evolved over time, and you're right, the IPTA is a different model. For those of you in the front, if you didn't hear, Frank was asking about a similar experience that NAPTA had in Flagstaff with dealing with this type of stuff and other and outside contributions. So I would say NAU is probably the biggest example for them. When NAPTA first formed, NAU was not part of NAPTA. And they had their own transit system on campus. And NAU eventually said, it's a lot cheaper, right, if we're combining forces. So their board structure is different because they're on the board, but they're not on the board, and it's complicated. But NAU is the biggest contributor outside of NAPTA and the city of Flagstaff. Coconino County also does contribute. That's pretty much it for their system. I don't know, I'd have to ask their staff if they get anything from like local hospitals or nonprofits or any of that stuff.
I guess my point is they've had pretty good luck at keeping the contributions coming.
Correct, yeah, they haven't had anybody pull out. They've actually added, and Sherry just nailed it. They actually have a citywide sales tax.
How much does Flag actually pay into the NAPSA system?
The city Flag stuff?
Yeah.
It's a lot, millions.
How much does the taxing authority run by, since they are an RTA?
So they're not an RTA. The city.
APO?
No, they're an IPTA. So the city of Flagstaff is the one with the tax, not Coconino County.
How much is that?
It's 0.37%. Yeah. So their whole, they actually have a bigger one because they also tax for roadway maintenance and new roadways, as well as the bus service. So their whole tax is like 0.75 or 0.78, something like that.
Chris, I listened close enough. We can't do an IPTA here in our area of over 200,000?
Correct. Everybody County is like 230 or more.
So the peer governance models of transit smoothly, obviously NUMA has an IPTA. And they're less than 200,000.
So they were. So here's another issue with the IPTA. We don't know what this means for Yuma, because the next census, they will be over 200,000. They're over 200,000 by all the estimates. So are they going to now have to go through the same thing? But they are countywide. So it's an interesting thing that the legislature put this person amount on there for some situation, which I believe was for Yuma, 20 years ago or 15 years ago. So it's a complicated thing, and maybe the changing of the legislation is the easiest way to make this happen, which doesn't sound easy at all.
But yeah, go to my comment. Flagstaff's, what's the area, greater area for NAPTA? How many people?
For the Flagstaff planning area and their service area, it's in the 80,000 range.
So very much smaller, but probably simpler. We can just change the legislation to 300,000 people.
Yeah, and I would say why just leave it up to 1.2? Why can't any county form? Because the 1.2 was actually written for Pima County when they formed their RTA. All that language is all Pima County. So, like, why have that limit? That just doesn't make sense.
So, isn't any better than IPTA if you got? JPO, you like that?
No, I'd rather have an. I think everybody would rather have an IPTA because the structure is set and it's really clear. And there are other examples of IPTAs. If we do a JPO, we're going to have to write the Constitution. We can use a lot of examples and we can borrow a lot from the IPTA, but it's a lot more complicated and we have to do more lead up work. If we have the IPTA, it's a structure, we can take that off the shelf and then start to work from there.
But you have taxing authority than IPTA. We still have to fund this thing.
You don't, right. So do you want to talk about funding? Or no, we had a couple questions. Yeah, go ahead.
I actually just have basically a comment. So as Pro Tem Billy Orr's guest said earlier this morning, Prescott had a bus service and then it went away. So my comment here, we are the people that represent the community. Whatever we do, whatever we think we're going to do, whatever we want to do, let's make sure we understand that we should try to make sure we can maintain whatever we're building. So more citizens do not sit there and ask, what happened? Because we're here to serve a community, and we do have to be realistic. We're depending on people to be partners.
Right, right.
And we need to make sure that whatever we build, that we can keep that service going, so we don't have a citizen come in and say, what happened?
Right.
Where'd it go?
So the comment in the back was that if we start a system, we really need to make sure that it's sustainable over time, and that we don't start something. This speaks to your comment earlier, that we don't start a system that then we end up walking away from. And so that's points well taken. And part of our costing models do assume a 10-year time period. And so that will be something that we'll be able to share and talk about as we move towards that detail. All right. So any last minute questions? So we have what I'm hearing from you all is that, okay, you generally agree with the JPO, but we should also have a recommendation in there for IPTA if the state legislature changes the authority and gives us room. You have one more question?
One more.
Okay.
Do you what do you expect to charge for the fair?
So that's a good question. I'm going to talk about fairs in a second, but I think Matt and I's assumption all along has been a dollar. But we haven't talked about that, but that's kind of what, in my mind, we've been talking about. So if we kind of transition to talking about some of the funding, just as a reminder, the cost that we've estimated for this system is about $1.8 million. That includes around $200,000 to administer and manage the program, $1.4 million worth of service. So those are hours of transit service when the bus is on the street, and then about $70,000 in capital costs. And the capital costs assume that we might want to have a system with, the first year we're going to have to buy some software to manage the service. The second year we might want to invest in some bus shelters. And then every year there's some money for some capital projects. But we're not going to do everything in the first year. We're going to build it over time. And so that's how we got to the $1.8 million. Our cost per service hour is $80, which is, Nelson and I, we work around the country. We feel like that is on the medium to high end of a region of this size. It's not too high, but it's not too low either. So we have confidence in that number. And we're happy to show the math to anybody who's interested.
Where are the buses?
The buses are included in the service cost. So for $80 an hour, you get your service plus the capital equipment.
How much are you figuring the cost per bus?
So it depends what kind of bus you buy. If we have, so we're looking at a couple of models. If we have the kind of buses that Yavapai Regional Transit has, they're about $80,000 to $100,000. If we bought a big bus like you see in Phoenix, those could be between $400,000 and $500,000. And so we probably would not buy a bus until we were sure we were going to fill it up. All right. So with the $1.8 million, there are some federal grants that are available. There are grants available for urban areas and also for rural areas. Our funding models assumes that we will take advantage of both of those grants, and those grants could bring in or should be able to bring in around $1.1 million to this region. So that's more than half, but it's not the full amount. Federal grants almost always require, many of you know this, that you bring in some of the local money to match that. And so what we're estimating, it's about $750,000 of money that we need to raise locally. And so when we think about where we can raise that money, that $750,000, we're assuming about $60,000 in fares. And so that's passengers paying their fare. Right, roughly a dollar a fare is what we put in our cost model. Hold on.
One more. Can't you, like, I mean, not everybody can give you $1,000, right?
Right.
Can't you, like, put a box out at some point, at some place, where people could throw in a donation?
Yes.
Well, it'd be nice if ridership just paid for itself.
It would be nice.
No, I mean,
yeah. So
before the ridership.
Oh, yeah. So we could ask for contributions, yes. And it would be great if ridership paid for itself. But that is a challenge for even the biggest and the busiest transit systems around the world. So if we have fares that cover about $60,000, again, this is a conservative estimate especially for the first year of operations. One of the things that we've been talking about in this group is that there's a lot of people already providing transportation in this region. And part of making this model work is to collaborate and to partner with some of those organizations. So it could be that they buy service from this transit provider and we can use that revenue, we can use that money as a local match. And so that means, for example, if people who care say, I'll give you $100,000 if you provide 1,000 trips or 5,000 trips, whatever the number is, we'll say, great, we'll take that $100,000, we'll match it with the federal money, and then we'll provide those trips. And as long as when we're operating that service, if our doors are open to the public, that is a legal way of doing business. It sounds simple, but it's simple things are always complicated, right? For this, a region of this size, if we right now, I think, Lindsay, how many operators do we have? Human service agencies providing transportation, it's a lot. They're spending over $1 million already in the region. We don't think all of those agencies are going to be able to contract for service, but some of them should be able to. And I think part of making this work and cost effective is getting some of those partnerships and some of those organizations to work. You'll notice I have a separate category that's partnerships, that's $50,000. That would be cases where somebody like possibly Yavapai College, maybe the hospital, some other institution would say, we'll give you a lump sum of money and everybody with a college ID rides the bus for free. And those kind of arrangements are used around the country. They've been very, very successful. And we've had some preliminary conversations, and there's been a little bit of interest. So we think we wouldn't ask one person to give us 50, but we think we could raise $50,000 from some of the local institutions in exchange for access to the transit service.
Just thinking, Yavapai College, Prescott College, they're all right there downtown.
Right.
And you go right by them.
Yep, and then everybody with a college ID rides for free, and they give us a lump sum. And through that lump sum, we can use that to match the federal money and raise money for this service. So that's our estimate, but that still leaves us with a balance of almost $370,000. And so what we would need to do is to raise some money from the municipalities. And this doesn't have to be a tax, it can be a contribution. Many transit agencies around the country, cities and towns, write checks for public transportation service because they see it as a value to their community. The way that we are proposing to allocate it is based on population. So we took the population in the region and then we allocated a percentage. So you see Prescott and Prescott Valley would be responsible for nearly a third of the funds. And then the county is about a quarter, and then we'd be looking for some contributions also from Chino Valley and Dewey Humboldt. And if you want to know what that amounts to, it's about a little bit less than 90,000 for Yavapai County, around 120 in Prescott, another 120 from Prescott Valley, a little bit less. Chino Valley would be in for around 30,000, Dewey Humboldt for about 12,000. Those are annual costs. And this is a straw man, so to speak. So these are the numbers that we think would be, you know, a way that we could share funds and have everybody put a little bit in so that we get to that $1.8 million so you can have a regional transit service.
Yes? But these contributions from the cities and towns assume that we've been able to develop the partnerships and the funding from contractors and so forth on your previous slide.
Yes. Yes.
So this is the rest of the cost that we would look for from the cities and towns after that partnership for $50,000 and the $277,000 service contract.
Exactly. Yep. Yes.
Could you charge like $2 fare and the hospitals, instead of getting a free ride, would pay 50%?
Yes, so you could charge whatever you want, right? But the idea is that many of the people who ride the bus are going to be lower income, and we, you know, we could, you know, $2 might be appropriate. We just used $1 as part of our first step. And then I think one of the reasons why, one of the things that we've learned nationally is that if you give everybody a free bus pass, they're more likely to ride the bus because they don't, you know, they don't have the dollar, they didn't have to set up an app on their phone. And that especially has been effective with college students, where if every college student has, if their student ID also gives them a chance to ride on the bus, I think NAU does this, right? They'll ride the bus a lot. And in Flagstaff, the students ride the bus a lot. And so it's, and it's a little bit easier for a transit agency to say, oh, you're gonna give me a check on January 1st for $100,000 rather than getting $2, $2, $2, you know, 50,000 times. So, because you don't have to collect that cash and it's just a lot easier. Transit agencies, and I think all of us, if somebody said, I'll give you $1 a day or $365 on day one, you'd rather have the money up front. And so it's a little bit easier to manage your operations that way. Yes?
And probably with that $1, you're going to have a rate structure where like a one-time fee is more, but a monthly pass is less.
Exactly.
So it's an average amount.
It's an average amount. And there's federal rules. If you take federal money, you have to charge older adults and people with disabilities. They pay half fare. Yep. So there will be a lot of structures. We'll try to keep that simple too, though. Yes?
Chris, what's the budget for SIMPO currently? That's all
operations, or
all employees and all its staff and all the equipment. What's the budget?
So Allison's in the rack. this is why we hired Allison, sir. $205,000 for three staff members, but that doesn't include the rent, which is actually in kind donation from Yavapai County.
So include the rent. Include the vehicle, include all the benefits and everything else. $350,000.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, I think the in-kind rent is somewhere around $80,000, $85,000, I think.
So would we still be getting the $1.2 million from FTA? I assume that's from FTA for the transit system. And you know, normally that's like it's 30% that you are you using the contract where it's an 80-20 match, or are you using, you know, because right now it's 5307 mm-hmm. and they don't pay for admin and they don't pay for right. certain things, and it comes out to about 30% that they would give you back.
Right. So every year our apportionment of 5307 goes up because our population keeps right. increasing. When we first formed the MPO, we were 700,000. We're now over 1.2. Okay. So I imagine that will continue to grow. So we're actually leveraging a portion of that, not all of it, but this percentages all at Bethany.
Yeah, so we did do that. We did that math. So we know that the way that the federal government works is they match different types of spending at different rates. And so administration, for example, is matched at 80%, but service is matched at 50%. Capital is matched at 80%. They match rural service differently than they match urban service. So we did do all of that math.
Because it just seems like it's not compared to what we do all the time, because ours are 80-20, 50-50. I mean, it's just, these seem like they're skewed.
Too high or too low?
I think it's too low. I think
we can get more
money that you're gonna have to come up with from everybody else, or if it's a contract issue, I think you can get 80-20, isn't that right, Chris? You can get an 80-20 with
contract.
5307?
No, not 5307,
oh.
No.
Okay.
If they bring all the benefits, right?
So we did do that. There is, yeah, you're right. It changes a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why it just doesn't seem quite right. You know?
So do you think our 1.8 million is too high, or do you think our assumption from the feds is too low?
Your match is too low.
You think that's too low?
Yeah.
Okay.
The service, and it's 50-50, you know, and no admin.
It's not all those seven.
It's 50-50 under the 11. It's not.
Well, and I think that this is the kind of thing I'm happy to share our spreadsheet with you, and you can take a look at it, and we can go over it, but I don't know that we need to do that, because it's kind of in the weeds a little bit. Yes, Lindy.
Why didn't you include 5310 on your assumptions about federal transit monies as part of this package, or is that embedded?
It is not
embedded. In the $277,000.
It's not embedded, and I think that that's a like a nuance that we're not there yet, but we can talk about that, and I don't think it's going to move the needle really. So how, I'm curious, you know, there's a lot of people from some of the municipalities and then also from agencies. If, how do these numbers sit with you? They seem like a reasonable ask, unreasonable by twice, some nodding in the back that says, okay, that seems about right. Yes?
Reasonable when you think about how many cars you might be able to take off the street. We hear a lot about our traffic and our road repair, and so if we can make this work and give service to our citizens for the city of Prescott for $120,000, I think it's a great deal.
Okay, good. Yes, Fritzy.
I'd like to say that as far as people who care and the assistance that we've been providing in Chino Valley, Prescott Valley, Dewey, and Prescott, the trend on the aging population is skyrocketing. And there is no way that it's a volunteer organization, because they're the ones who do the work out there, very small staff. There is no way that we can meet that need. I mean, it's getting more challenging all the time. We have to present more criteria for people to help. And I know that Bernie Dollar Caregivers does contract with the public transit over there to pick up some of the rides. And I think that those are kind of the options that we all have to be looking at. But look at the number of aging population we have, and the volunteers and the faith communities are not going to be able to meet that need, and that's just a reality.
Fritzy, I think you're absolutely right. The problem with the aging population is they don't want to pay for it.
If they want to ride, they better pay for it.
I don't know. They wouldn't fix the roads in Chino Valley.
No. But I'm thinking that we have to present different ways to handle, to take care of people. And servant leadership, and I think those in the nonprofit sector and in government have to take the lead and step out, and let's get this started.
I agree.
So I have a question over here.
Pay for it.
Over here and then in the back. Yes.
Okay. The question that I have then, if this goes through, the money that the county right now is giving YRT, we were going to talking about upping that. They're not going to get it from us anymore. We're just going to give it to this.
That is the assumption. It could be that YRT is this. And that our regional transit authority is Yavapai Regional Transit, and that they take over some additional responsibilities.
We're not having competing routes?
Exactly. We're not. One would replace the other.
Basically, based on that number right there, we would be giving this entity more than three times what we are currently giving them.
Right. And then they wouldn't run the program anymore?
Or they run the whole thing?
Oh, they run the whole thing, maybe.
We can't. We're nonprofit.
Right, well, you would have to change, you'd become a JPO.
Right.
Yeah.
And we pay you to do it.
Yeah.
We'll be retired.
Okay, we'll pay Zach to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there was a question in the back.
There's no question, just a comment.
Yes.
Chino Valley, and I can just say, I can't speak for our council, but the number's lower than what I expected, but then yet, at the other part, we're also probably getting a little bit worse service than we're currently getting. But regionally, it is probably a good solution. So I want to look at it from that perspective, but I really can't speak for the council.
Okay, thank you for that. And that was a comment from Chino Valley, who said that the number's lower, but the service is less, but seems like about right for a regional service. Yes.
And I'm not speaking for my council.
Okay.
Just personally, I think it's a deal.
So Terry and then Jen.
Yeah, will you be able to utilize the buses that Chino Valley already has?
So we're not, yes, we could. Our analysis right now does not go into that kind of nuance, but the idea is if YRT became the regional transit provider, they would leverage those vehicles. It might be some kind of thing we would have to work out where they would sell them, you know, would liquidate one. There would be some complications because it's federal money, but we could figure that out.
We can do that tomorrow. We're ready.
You're ready to retire.
Yeah.
like, be a benefit rather than have all the buses.
There you go. You guys
just be sitting there in the yard.
Right, right. I think in practicality, that's what we would want to do.
They wouldn't be sitting, though.
Right, they'd be out running. And then, Jen, did you have a question?
Yeah, well, I can go up for her.
Okay, go ahead, Mary.
Yeah.
I actually just want to thank you for what you've done. I realized I was here, and this is all the information we worked on a few months back, and I just want to thank all of you for your hard work and bringing this back out. And, of course, we do have more things to talk about, but I appreciate all the work you put into this. I really do. You've done a great job.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
So one thing I feel that I'm hearing is that there's hesitation about the cost, that maybe people aren't really comfortable with that number of how much it's going to cost, and they need more information about that, and that without having that information, it's hard for them to commit to supporting the amount for their jurisdiction, not knowing if that's an actual number. So maybe more information could be distributed. I'm not proposing a solution, but that's kind of what I'm hearing.
Right. No, there's definitely, I'm hearing that skepticism that maybe our numbers aren't right, or they want to look at our math a little more closely. And I think that's something that we can do is, I think we're happy to share our spreadsheet analysis with everybody. And then one thing that I was thinking about, and certainly I think Sandy and Sherry would like this, is we can set up some kind of time to get on the phone and go over that. You guys can, we'll send it out, you can take a look at it, and then we can work on it together, and you can say, where'd you get this number, why did you do that, and then we can take a fine pencil to it. Because for sure, one of the things that we heard from the stakeholders is they want to know exactly what it's going to cost us this year and how much it's going to cost us next year and then the year after, and what we're going to get for that. And so what we presented some detail today, but we know that we have to take it to the next level of detail. Like, how many bus stops are we going to get? How many round trips are we going to get? When is the bus going to stop? When is it going to end? How many people do you think we're going to carry? We have made a lot of those assumptions, but of course, you know, I think we've already spent 2 hours, and it's been great. You guys have had a lot of questions, but I know we still need to go step by step through some things. Yes?
In the analyzation of this whole thing, would it not be better or cheaper in the long run to be able to admit donations directly to YRT and let them expand their own process and move forward as a 501c3?
So the big... They've been doing that for 10 years.
No, but if we're going to be making these kinds of donations, they would be able to expand their service considerably.
Well, they could. But so the big problem with the way that YRT is set up right now is that it's a nonprofit organization. And as a nonprofit organization, they cannot receive federal grants directly.
5307.
I'm not talking about federal grants. I'm talking about donations directly from either these political entities and or, you know, private parties. For that goes, you know, we all say, okay, this is basically, we give it to them and let them spend it.
Right, so we could do that.
We save on administration that way, and we don't have to deal with any of that other stuff.
Maybe, but you're leaving $1 million on the table.
Yeah.
And I think
they're already giving us most of the equipment and overhead and administration fees.
Yeah, but the biggest
For me to give it to them and go to private business. And that way I get NACOG out of this and the federal government out of it as well.
So the thing is, they have vehicles and they have some equipment, but the thing that drives costs is the driver. So I think it's 70 to 80% of 86% of the cost per hour is the cost of that driver's salary, and so you need the money if you want to have the kind of service that we're proposing that starts at 6 o'clock in the morning and runs until 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You need that money from the feds.
Well, just notoriously, if government's involved, it's going to cost you at least 50% more than it would on the outside. So it would seem to me it would be better for us to just get, like we currently do in the county, to CAT and to YRT, is that we supply them. We give them the money, they supply the service. Why would the county want to be in the bus business?
So I think, maybe it doesn't.
We don't service the entire county. Why should we be in the bus business?
So you're providing...
Why should the people of Dewey Humboldt, or actually, let's go Dakota Mayor, Black Canyon City, Camp Verde, Ash Forks to live in. Why should they, with their tax dollars that come to us, why should we spend their tax dollars to support something that doesn't service them?
Well, so we're building the roads, right? Those tax dollars that are collected in Dewey Humboldt are also building roads.
So you're telling me we're going to take this money out of our road fund?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that a lot of cities and communities pay into a pot of money that then's distributed regionally for regional benefit. And I think the fundamental premise to this is that the public transportation network, it's a system, it's a service for moving people, giving people choices, getting them access to jobs, and that has value to the community overall, and that by Dewey Humboldt paying in, it's getting some service. It's getting some service for its residents. People can also get out to Dewey Humboldt more easily.
Yeah, and I'm going to let you come to one of my town halls up in Sligman and
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Well, the idea of giving these amounts to Yavapai Regional Transit, that doesn't take into account that Yavapai Regional Transit is using the money that they have to leverage an existing federal grant, a rural transit grant. And even if we gave them all this money, they could not expand into the semi-urban areas of the region because that's not legal.
Right, as long as they take the federal money.
Well, we could, because we're a nonprofit, and we could set up a separate set of books. I mean, it's a lot of work that you would have that money in a separate pot.
An accounting nightmare.
Exactly. But, I mean, we talked about it.
That amount of money is not enough to do it. You would also have to replace.
That 1.2.
You'd have to add in money equal to what you're already getting with your rural grant.
Okay. So I know we're at or past 12, I was going to say 11, but it's 12. So I just want to tell you quickly what our next steps are. So we got a lot of good feedback today, and again, we're open to hearing more. You can always contact us directly, and we will make our spreadsheet available to those of you who want to dive into that a little bit more deeply. And then we're going to be updating our recommendations based on the feedback that we received today, and we'll be pulling it together in a draft report and then also a final report that we will share with you for review. And that will include the service plan, the governance strategy, and then also the funding recommendations. And then, as I mentioned, we'll create a briefing book that's going to be, we'll create technical documents, but also a briefing book. You've seen some of that already. That's designed to be a little bit more accessible to a broader audience. We also would like to have, once we get that together, have one more stakeholder meeting so you can take a chance to look at those final recommendations and see what we've put down and provide some comments and feedback on those. Yes?
I've got to have some paper. Are we going to get this presentation sent to us?
If you would like it, you can have it.
Yes. Okay. Any technical documents before Thanksgiving for us, technical members?
We'll get them sent out. So everybody knows. We did record. So everything you said is being tracked. Sherry. We had numerous requests to do an audio recording, and we're going to post that on the SIMPO website along with all of this information under our project page, so I'm not sure if we'll get it up today, maybe it'll be tomorrow, but we do plan on having that out there, and some of the folks who left early, I did tell them all that, so it's all will be available there, but if you want to email directly to you, we can do that too. You just gotta let us know. So, Norm, you want to direct?
My birthday.
Yes.
Will we get anything more before Thanksgiving, or that's it?
We do have some technical documents, the peer review that Wilson and Company did, that's available. Also, we have a technical report on the survey results, that's available. We do have the preliminary briefing book. We're going to update that with the service recommendations, and you'll get that before Thanksgiving. So you will get some paper. Consultants are really good at producing paper, you know that.
What about meetings, future meetings?
Yeah, so I have October. That feels about right to me. Gives us time to distill all the information that we've had, follow up with a couple of you, prepare some final recommendations for a review, so maybe late October. Yes, Ron?
Before we leave, I know a lot of people are concerned about Sarah being able to go to the movies, and talking with her, she lives within her purview, we're going to now start picking her up.
Aww. Yay.
We're we're going to try it, you know.
Go ahead.
I just have one last question. The option to go to the legislature with an effort to change the law, who's going to take the lead on that?
It's people who care is going to take the lead on changing the IBTA legislation, is what I heard.
I don't know
if that's Simpo or somebody else. It could be the Arizona Trans Association. It could be anybody. It could be Yuma, for all I know. But I think Yuma's still got to worry about that. So if that's something that they have to change anyways, then I might as well be talking to them about, well, let's make sure we support you in that. And I guess we kind of went back and forth, and I just wanted to ask everybody the question, so that the Joint Powers Organization and what Supervisor Brown was talking about, like, if Norm was trying to hit on this, that sustainable funding source. So if we're throwing in general fund dollars and that continues to grow, is that sustainable? And is there an option that, you know, a tax is on the table under joint powers? That is Yavapai County Board of Supervisors. And that goes countywide. That cannot be set on a district that I'm aware of. That's something I need to research more. But that means exactly what Supervisor Brown said. Cottonwood, Camvery, Ashworks, Seligman, Yarnell, all those places are paying into a tax to help support a transit system in just this area. The RTA option has the other side of it, but it's not the county board. The RTA board is the one that goes out for the vote, but under that situation, Cottonwood Transit receives dollars. If Sedona starts a transit system, they would receive dollars as well as this system. So it does spread it around a little bit. So if you are paying under those two different scenarios, that's really the basic difference. But if we do the IPTA, then there is no taxing. So just so everybody's aware, I think we're kind of not sure which one it is yet, but maybe we need to talk more locally.
Well, if you were to start with the JPO and were successful with the legislature to transition in 3 to 5 years to the RPTA, under both of those arrangements, the participating partners could bring funding from their organizations to the table. Mm-hmm. And that could in fact be a sales tax that was limited to a particular municipality, and not necessarily the only option would be the excise tax that would be countywide. But an individual partner, an individual municipality could float a initiative or a referendum to increase the tax and sales tax, for example, and dedicate that to funding their portion of the JPO or the IPTA.
Yes, you got it.
I don't know that would be legal, taxing different people at different rates or funding from different means or sources.
Well, I think that's what NAFTA does, right?
Yeah, City of Flagstaff has the tax, but Coconino contributes general fund.
Yeah, so in that case, the IPTA, it's not levying the tax itself. Yeah. The IPTA is not issuing the tax. The town agrees to pay the IPTA $100,000. They collect that $100,000 through a tax that's levied on their citizens. So it's a workaround.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have another.
Yeah, no, it's 12. Thanks to everybody who's been here for 2 hours. Really appreciate it. I know it's a long time to talk about public transportation. Thank you very much.
I love it. Maybe the big scheme of things here, though.
Not really. As long as we avoid the severe thunderstorm warning for 6 5 minutes.